This is Ozarks at Large. 2011 marks the bicentennial of the birth of Hungarian composer and virtuoso pianist Franz Liszt. In honor of this milestone, Jura Margulis Piano and Elisa Margulis Violin will perform an all-Liszt concert at 8 o'clock tonight at the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall, located in the Fine Arts Building on the University of Arkansas campus. The brother and sister visited the Furman Garner Performance Studio yesterday to talk with Ozarks at Large's PJ Robowski about the upcoming concert, as well as how the siblings get along on and off the stage.
I know you get along musically. How about otherwise?
Very well.
Yes.
Very well. Okay.
Since early childhood.
Yes.
Okay. Now, were you Elisa's protector and defender?
Yes.
That's very kind. I think
you trained me.
My sisters, I have another sister, Natasha, who's a cellist, and both my younger sisters, they tell me that I tormented them, but it steeled their character.
It did.
Really? Yeah, because I can't imagine you tormenting anyone.
We had a tough childhood with
him. I bet.
No.
But we learned a lot.
I prepared him for life.
Now, your father is a famous pianist and teacher. How did you end up with the instruments you play? Elisa, you play violin.
I did it really because everybody played piano in our family. Even my sister, who later changed to cello, she played piano from childhood, and when I was three, I remember my grandma always told me, don't choose the piano also. And then I had somehow something already, I knew I will not play piano, and then I discovered the violin when I was four, and I said, that's it.
Okay,
and since then I never ever doubted it.
Where were you living then?
In Germany.
In Freiburg.
Germany. And how many pianos did you have in your home?
Oh, like five.
Yeah. 5 grand pianos.
No, I grew up with piano music. I always knew it. And
our entire family is professionally musicians.
I know. I think that it's like the Bach family, you know?
There were a lot more of them, but yes.
Yeah, of course, there were 20 children there, and there were only three in your
Bach
family,
Bach himself was one of 75 Bachs in Europe.
Oh, yeah.
Professional musicians. It was not just him and his children, but he himself was a child of a musician, and it was a huge extended musical, the largest musical family in Europe.
So it was just expected of your children at
just
that
like
time?
Like in our case.
Yes,
but it was very natural. I don't know. I could not, when I was so young, I could not think of not making music or listening to music, so it was totally natural. And when I came to the school, first class, I remember I saw other kids who didn't play an instrument. I didn't understand how it's possible.
And did you grow up with just classical music when you were a child?
Largely.
Okay, and then when did you discover there were other types of music out there?
Yeah.
At school?
Yeah, and
In due time.
It's important to listen to other music also.
Of course.
Really. Do you think having a classical music background helps? If you say you got into British rock, do you think having a classical music background helps with anything, any
Everything
other kind of music?
Everything is somehow based on Bach. Even jazz music is based on Bach. Bach is jazz.
Yeah, in
a way.
The harmonic structures are the same in modern rock and in ancient music.
Yeah.
I think that's wonderful.
Yeah. I'm sure every great rock star has knowledge of basic classical education.
Bill Evans, it's not rock, but jazz musicians study classical music profoundly.
Definitely. Yeah. Okay, now, the concert that you're performing this evening is all Liszt,
That's right?
right.
Very unusual program. Yes.
Right. Now, what made you decide on an all Liszt program, Franz Liszt, by
it
the way?
It is the bicentennial of his birth year, 2011.
And actually, I had the idea because Jura, my brother, is an amazing pianist. Not many people can play Liszt or anything like him. And I always, since I was small, his Liszt was amazing. So I thought that's the thing to play with him. You know?
And we're recording is actually a CD with this repertoire.
Oh, this is wonderful.
For the Liszt Bicentennial. Yeah.
This is wonderful.
So
now,
we prepared this program. It's mostly pieces that haven't been played much, like at all. There's some pieces that are not performed at all, ever.
And why is that?
Incredibly difficult. And some of this, Liszt is mostly known for his solo piano music, of course, and some of his orchestral, or all his orchestral music.
Which came later.
Yeah, exactly. And his duo music for piano and violin is basically unknown. He's not known as a composer for the violin. But there are some very interesting things.
And few very daring
pieces.
daring violinists who have a really good technique, because you need to have a really good technique for these pieces. They dare to play this stuff. So I think for me it's great to have discovered and worked on this, and it's really special music.
Yeah, it's an unusual program, truly. I mean, you know, when you play duo, very often you play a Beethoven sonata, Franck, Prokofiev, you know, so many
right.
other pieces, chansons.
Right, so I was this, surprised like, when I saw the whole list.
Yeah, but it's the bicentennial, and it's
and
a
we thought who, if not us,
yeah,
should do this.
Exactly. Somebody's got to do it.
And Liszt was just such an interesting
man
life, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, he was if you'll pardon my terms, kind of the Elvis of classical music, in the sense that women just, you know, they would take his gloves and rip them into threads, and everybody got threads,
they
or
threw
take his
jewelry scarf at him.
Oh, yeah.
See?
Until
well,
he
yes.
became a priest, no?
Well, he became an abbé, yes.
He wasn't he brokenhearted? Wasn't that when he was very young? Was that when he was young? I mean, he fell in love when he was like 16,
well,
right?
He fell in love a lot, I think.
Oh, I know. But this was like his first love, and he was 16, and she loved him, but her family said no, and they hurried up and married her off to someone else. And wasn't that when the first time he decided he wanted to be a priest?
Well, I think he was, I mean, on a more serious note, conflicted between the demonic and the angelic in humans in general, and he felt it very strongly himself, and he was, you know, under great impression by, for example, somebody like Paganini, and by, you know, by what you would call the dark side.
Right.
And at the same time, he felt compelled going towards religion, and he there is also not very known repertoire that is specifically religious repertoire, compositions that are specifically sort of confirming the Christian faith in a very, very strong way in his music.
Now, but Liszt, even in his performance style, he was so
demonic, absolutely demonic.
Like Paganini.
Yes,
and
so influenced.
But women loved it.
Of course. Well, men too, you know.
Because, you know, they like that bad boy. You think that's it?
Yeah, but it's not only that. He had a vision in his music making as an artist on stage that was unprecedented. This is what made him what you would call Elvis. It made him absolutely unique, and we are all basically trying to recreate what he did.
But then he only did that, what, until he
That's
was
right.
30s or something? And then
in
he stopped performing,
That's right.
Didn't
he felt that he reached his peak as a performer. By the way, the boldest move you can imagine, to stop at the height of your game.
Oh.
He was the greatest virtuoso ever to live, and he stopped
right.
when he was on his peak. That's unbelievable. And he devoted his life to teaching, and particularly composition. And he was quite an apparition, apparently. I read a lot of biographies by other people that had lessons with him when he was a little older in Weimar, and it must have been, you know, like an audience with a sage and with a magician somehow.
Do you think that when he hit his peak, he knew it and went,
yes,
okay,
yes,
it's not going to get any better than
he
this?
He was a genius, I mean, in many aspects, particularly what was concerning his art.
I also read that, you know, he also got to the point where he's going, I'm playing music for money. People are giving me money. It's not about money. You think that's not true? Everybody needs money.
Of course. And he liked to live well, but it wasn't about money for him. I mean, he got paid well. I mean, he actually was the highest paid artist in his time.
Now, when you talk
on
about
purpose, but because he could do it, you know.
Well, he was traveling and giving what three and four concerts a week.
Yeah.
You know, and now Weimar, isn't that where he ended up with his last wife? And supposedly she was of royalty, and she was snubbed a bit after they got married. But then all these composers and wonderful friends would come there.
He was with a Countess Madame Dagu, and then he was with a princess of Savoyen-Wittgenstein. I cannot pronounce
which
name.
Country?
Oh, you know, Dagu, probably French, and Wittgenstein, probably German or Austrian.
and many other women in between.
But you know what? I think there is partially a myth about him, about the womanizing aspect. I mean,
really?
Women adored him. But,
uh-huh.
I mean, you know, as a psychological profile.
He was very handsome.
No, he was not handsome, but
he was too. He was handsome when he was young, he was.
Yeah, he had a nice
haircut. He had a very distinct features, I would say.
Distinct nose.
No, but he was irresistibly charismatic, of course. You know, I mean, at that level of talent, if you are pretty boy or not, doesn't matter. He was magnetic personality. Mm. I mean, when he came into a room, everything stopped. And he knew that, of course. But it was based not on looks. It was based on who he was. He was also a very, very generous man, you know?
There are
many
yes.
stories about him. how kind he was. He helped strangers.
And he gave to the arts.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a story. There was a concert of there was a Schubert symphony performed, and you know, he was, like, in the intermission, he stepped outside and he saw somebody crying, and he said, "Oh, my friend, you feel the same as I. The music moved you." And he said, "No, my wallet got stolen." And Liszt turned around and gave him, without looking at him, his wallet.
His whole wallet?
Yeah,
his entire
crying for money here. Just take my wallet, you know.
Come on,
after a Schubert symphony, how can you be like that?
Wow. Okay, now how do you compare yourself with Liszt when you're playing? Do you have a dark side, Jura, when you're playing Liszt?
Oh, yes.
Okay, now how about you, Elisa?
Do
you have that dark side when you play Liszt?
I don't know, dark. Well, we play some pieces that are extremely dark and deep. There are some really incredible pieces.
You know, talking about the repertoire, we're actually playing an incredibly interesting spread.
Because that's what I was just going to ask.
Like, we're playing truly kind of, I mean, he wrote, of course, much more than that, but we're playing a piece that he wrote when he was literally 21. I mean, he was incredibly young.
But he had done so much by then.
But as a composer, he came sort of on world stage really right about that time, you know, when he came to Paris. And that is a very, very early piece we're playing by him, the sonata, the four movement. Yeah. It's actually unique, even in all of his compositions, it is a unique piece. Meaning, you know, I know his piano repertoire, most of it, you know, I played. That is a piece that is not like anything he composed in his piano repertoire. It is an absolutely unique piece. The form is unusual. It is based, actually, he came to Paris and was, you know, had so many new influences, including his friendship with Frédéric Chopin. So this piece is entirely based on a mazurka by Chopin, entirely, which means we actually get to play the Chopin mazurka in his sonata in pieces. But then he makes lots of very unusual variations of that piece, trying to emulate the Chopin style, trying to emulate all kinds of new virtuoso things that he was experimenting with. And in addition, most of his works were revised by himself and by others eventually, but most, I mean, you know, by himself. This is a piece he has never revised, which means it's the first raw form that we played. You know, it was discovered literally in 1960. It has been not performed or even known about.
And again, what's the title of this piece?
That's the piano sonata.
The duo sonata
for piano and violin by Franz Liszt.
Most people,
even violinists and pianists, wouldn't know it exists, because it's a very rare composition by him. And as I say, his contemporaries knew about this piece and found it very interesting, because, as I say, he has some bold and new experimentation in this piece. It's unlike any other piece by him. So, I mean, this is our first piece, and we are playing throughout his life sort of pieces. There's a piece we play that he wrote literally a few years before his death, so he was an old man, and it is harmonically...
It's very spaced
very far,
out.
Yeah, very spaced out. It's minimalist music, essentially. It has no tonality, really. I mean, he went far out and far beyond his own time as a composer. And people, I mean, at his time, people thought, well, you know, he kind of lost it a little bit. But somebody like Wagner recognized that Liszt was going harmonically in a direction that is definitely the future.
Right.
And I mean, you know, minimalist music only really started to come on stage in the 20th century. And this piece, if anything, is minimalist. It has very little very little movement, although it's quite long, and it has basically no key. You cannot tell what key it is in.
Do you think I can get the two of you to play something for us today?
Of course. We'll play...
What?
A forgotten romance, a romance oublié.
And it's very also unusual, because mostly you think of Liszt as virtuoso. This is a very slow,
a
beautiful,
piece.
Sad piece.
It's a romance.
Yeah. Well, let's listen.
Sure, with pleasure.
Yura and Elisa Margulis spoke with PJ Robowski yesterday in the Furman Garner Performance Studio. Tonight's concert begins at 8 in the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall on the U of A campus. The concert is free and open to the public. More information is available at 479-575-4701.